Before we look at the readings of the day, let me point out something about the flow of the liturgy. This would be of interest, I assume, to honorable people who are not simply going to Mass on Sunday, but are every day following the liturgical word. You know that the cycle of the Sunday readings and the cycle of the weekday readings is different. And most people think, well, they're completely independent. But if you look closely, you can see that they're also sometimes very closely interwoven. And this is what happens in this first week of ordinary time in year B, cycle B of the Sunday Gospels. I pointed out on Monday that the Gospel on Monday happened to be the same Gospel reading we will hear on the third Sunday of ordinary time, because we're in year B and we're reading from the Gospel of Mark. And that came to me because the front cover has the picture of Jesus calling the first apostles, "Come after me and I will make you fishers of men." This is the picture that goes with Monday's Gospel and also the Gospel of the third Sunday. Well, yesterday's Gospel, Tuesday, it was the Gospel that we will hear on the fourth Sunday. Today's Gospel, Wednesday, is what we're going to hear on the fifth Sunday. Tomorrow's Gospel we will hear on the sixth Sunday this year. So you can see this week of weekday Gospels is also a preview of the first 6 weeks of ordinary time. And in the sixth week, along comes Ash Wednesday, and we start a new direction for Ash Wednesday and the season of Lent. So the rest of the pattern is not the same. But you can kind of see a little, like I said, interwoven cycle, or the interweaving of the two cycles, weekdays and Sundays. And since most of the pondering groups ponder the Sunday readings, those of you who are looking for Sunday readings, you can, when you get to those Sundays, you can look back to the meditations of this week, or if you want to look ahead, if you really want to be diligent about it, in pondering these weekday Gospels, you can also look ahead to the Sundays and get some additional insight. Okay, let's take a look at today's readings. We know we're in the week of the baptism, and we're reflecting on what Jesus did after being baptized and after wrestling with the evil one in the desert. Then he begins his public ministry. He gathers disciples, he drives out demons, he proclaims the gospel. And today's gospel gives us a quite beautiful overview of what Jesus was doing. A little bit of everything in this gospel. Heals the mother-in-law of Simon. He heals pretty much everybody who shows up from Capernaum. He goes off and prays by himself in a deserted place. And then he goes to the area all around. So you can see very specific ministry and also kind of overview of his ministry, which answers a question that sometimes troubles people. People think that if God is paying attention to me and my little problems, how can he run the whole world? If he's here doing what I want him to do, like a vending machine, well, then he can't be the God who keeps the planets and the stars in place. That's how people sometimes think. Or they think, well, if God is running the whole world, how can he pay attention to my little problems? How can he hear my prayer when there's billions of people praying? In other words, if he's so big, he can't be small. If he's too small, he can't be big. That's how people limit God. And this gospel gives us an insight into this. He's both big and small. He's both aware of and running the whole picture, and he is concerned about the one lost sheep. So here, it starts out with the particular, which is where most of us start too. We start with what concerns us. Here, the particular person is the mother-in-law of Simon. So Simon's wife's mother, and she has a particular problem. She's in bed with a fever. Is it too small for God to be concerned about one woman in one little house in Capernaum with one illness? No, not too small. He goes to her, takes her by the hand, helps her up, heals her of the fever. God is concerned about each person and each problem of each person. We would love to know more details. What happened to Peter's wife? What's her name? What's the name of his mother-in-law? Why is his mother-in-law living in his house? And all these things we don't know. But what we do know is God knows these things. He knows every detail. And he comes to address, yes, every detail. But that's not all he does. He's not preoccupied with one problem of one person. He also is concerned about all the people in Capernaum, especially the sick and those who are tormented by demons. And he heals and he sets free the possessed. But that's not all he's doing. He also is aware of his intimate relationship with the Father, and everything he does flows from that relationship. So when he rises early in the morning, he goes off and prays. He reaffirms his union with the Father. And that's not all he's doing. He also has to go to all the villages all around and proclaim the good news, call people to repentance, and call them back to God. And he has to drive out demons, he has to heal diseases. Now, you see, the more we see what Jesus is doing, the bigger it gets, until we say, well, how can one man do all that? Well, he's not just one man, he's one man who is God. So this gospel gives us quite a synopsis of everything Jesus is doing, why he came. This is why I have come. The first reading helps us understand a little more the big picture, not the particulars, but the overall mission. Jesus, who is the Son of the Father, who is God, has taken on blood and flesh. He is fully human. And in this human nature, he comes to do a work that we in our human nature can't do. He comes to overcome the devil, Satan, and to overcome his weapons, sin and death. Satan, sin, death. He's taking it all on as a man so that man can have victory over Satan and sin and death. And the Hebrews reading says this quite beautifully. Jesus shared in our blood and flesh, he shared in our human nature, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil. So he's come to destroy the devil, he's come to destroy death, and free those who through fear of death had been subject to slavery all their life. So fear of death enslaves us. Even the idea of death is frightening, and the prospect that we might die is frightening, and we often curtail our love out of fear. We don't want to take risks. Well, Jesus overcomes all of that. He says, well, you don't have to worry about death. You don't have to live enslaved by fear of death, because I have already taken on death, and I have defeated it. You don't have to be afraid of the devil, because I have defeated him. And you don't have to live in a constant protection of yourself, because I have come to set you free. Don't have to be afraid of suffering, because I have suffered for you. He himself was tested through what he suffered. He is able to help those who are being tested. Well, we are being tested. Every day is a test. Every day is a time when we have to pass through suffering, and we run the risk of, in our fear of suffering, not doing the will of God, or doing what is not the will of God. We run the risk of acting as if God is not taking care of us. So this set of readings, the first the gospel, which shows Jesus taking care of particular details and also capable of caring for whole villages, And this reading from Hebrews, which tells us what Jesus' mission is, to set us free from slavery to the fear of death, set us free from fear of the devil, and set us free from fear of suffering. These two readings, they really give us a lot to go on. We're given a great boost by the divine word here, so that we can go forth in the power of the Spirit, go forth in the life we have received in baptism, and serve the Lord and serve those to whom he sends us. So with confidence in the Lord, who's on our side, we can go forth as his children, as his disciples, as his missionaries.